this is really good. If you liked last week, you're going to like this week even more. So I'm going to stop talking about it so you can just listen to it. We got Tarun Agrawal, part two.
And now it's time for the Dental Hacks interview.
This into reality. I read your blog pretty regularly, and let's go ahead and put the, I'm trying to remember the blog, the URL. What's the URL for the blog?
It's 3ddentists.com.
3ddentists.com. Honestly, I don't see anyone doing the stuff that you're doing and the way that you're documenting it. I mean, it's pretty spectacular. And I look at that and go, okay, so he's doing this and he's taking insurance. That's hopeful for all of us. You know what I'm saying? Like that's like the regular folks can say, okay, he's doing this within a framework. I'd like to hear how you're able to do. And we're talking about you're teaching a lot of implants. You're teaching CAD/CAM. You're integrating 3D imaging. All this really cutting edge stuff. So I want to hear about that. How you do that in a real office, not like a
fake office. I remember Howard Foran always calls them dodos. Don't operate a dental practice. You know those speakers that get out there and listen. I have no patience for people like that. Zero patience for people who don't own or don't operate a practice or who talk about things when they don't live it or breathe it. And things change on a yearly basis. Things change certainly every 4 or 5 years. You're out of touch if you're not seeing patients regularly.
You've recently opened up a teaching center, basically. What's the teaching center called?
It's 3D Dentists.
3D Dentists. Okay, so that's along
with them. I don't have a fancy name.
I was looking for Institute, something Institute.
Yeah, no, not for me.
The Tarun Agrawal Institute. I like that.
Nobody would show up other than other Indians, and they would all want a discount.
This is too expensive. I can't do this.
Oh, I had some Russian guys tell me that in Boston this week. They said, we want to learn how you're doing some of these cases because that could really save us a lot of money and save down our time. But I think $2,500 is too much for your class. I'm like, so you want me to help you sell $30,000 cases and make them more profitable and efficient for you, but $2,500 for a class is too much money. I'm a pretty frank person. I said, I don't want you to come to my class anyway.
Yeah, there you go. $2,500, and the class is a weekend? Is that typically?
Typically, most of our classes are 2 days.
Sure.
I'm not really here to try to sell our classes, but basically.
No, but I'm interested, man. I didn't.
But basically most of the classes are 2 days, and really the premise behind our classes are that our classes are modeled behind my own journey in what I'm doing. In other words, I look back when I started in implants, I knew nothing. I goofed several up, they worked, but I goofed them up. They weren't perfect. And then I started from nothing to doing simple back teeth, to really understanding the technology. Then I moved into more complex anterior teeth. Then I moved into doing teeth where I take out teeth and put an implant in right away. And we shouldn't really call it an extraction. Mike DeTola said this to me. We should stop calling it an extraction and start calling tell patients we need to do a tooth replacement.
Yeah.
We need to take the one you have out and put another one in. And so we started working that way. And then we moved into cases where people were missing more than one teeth or one tooth. And we did multiple teeth. And now we moved into this edentulous world where we're taking out teeth or people that are already edentulous and giving them teeth back. And so my class is a model around that. They're 2 days each. On average, they're between $2,000 to $3,000 per session. They're basically all hands-on.
Okay, here's the deal. That's a huge value, having looked at how CE gets more and more expensive. That's a tremendous value. That's like,
well, it gets better from that sense, and part of it's because I don't have a business entity owning me behind me. It's me, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's my office, and to me, that's a value. When you come, you get to see my office, you get to meet my team, you get to walk through and see, hey, he's really doing what he's saying he's doing. You can ask my team questions, you can go through my drawers and look at the different materials that we're using. And the other thing we do is we do a live patient at almost every class, so you get to watch what we're doing. We only allow 12 people per class, and each person has their own computer, so they can do the computer exercises. There's no sharing computers or anything. I'm not saying I don't make money doing it, but that's not the driving force behind it. But it's fun. It's enjoyable.
Sounds great.
Well, for me, a lot of it's like a second career in a sense. You know, when maybe physically I can't do dentistry again, maybe my hands get arthritis or my back hurts. You know, I can continue my teaching for a very long time.
So, Jason, tell me a little bit about your thoughts on Tarun's class, because you've been down to take it.
Yeah, I went a couple months ago, and I went for the All on Four class. I'm originally going to go to one of the Malo classes, and I saw this class. I got a brochure in the nick of time, and I really enjoyed it. I think I probably would have enjoyed it better than the Malo class, because Tarun's style kind of fits in with the way I like things. It's very down to earth. This is how you do it. This is what you need. It's no fluff. We went in. We watched the live surgery. We made our own sample on the fours. Watched everything. I was in. We were in the operating room. They had a great video system up there. It was just pretty awesome. I mean, you saw the whole flow from start to finish. My learning style, that was great, because it kind of put everything in sequence and able to figure it out and kind of put all the pieces together and see why you do this and why this happens. And the oral surgeon was great, man. I was just impressed at how fast he took those teeth out. It was pretty amazing to me. It did some like tap trick on them, and they were just pop, 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 pop. And it was amazing.
Do you do it yourself, or do you use the surgeon for all that stuff, Drew?
No. It's, I preach a team approach. I think there's three components to doing great implant dentistry. There's the restorative side, the surgical side, and the laboratory side. And sometimes I am all three sides. As a CAD-CAM owner, as a CEREC owner, I can do the laboratory side of things. And sometimes I don't, the laboratory does the lab thing and I do the restorative and surgical side. And sometimes there's three people involved in it. And so my complex cases, my full arch cases, you know, I can do those surgeries. I've done those surgeries. I'm not as good or as fast as Uday. But what I tell people is, I say, listen, these patients are sick. You don't get to a state where you've lost all your teeth or you need to lose all your teeth by being the model citizen of health.
Sure.
And so we're intubating our patients, where we're general anesthesia, ventilator, and we're doing significant surgery on them. So I choose to work in a team approach for these complex cases. I do about, I would say probably 75 or 80% of the implants that are done through our office, I do myself. About 20% or so are done as a team with my surgeon, and we work very closely together to make great results for our patients.
That's very cool. So what percentage of your implant placements are, you know, all on four, kind of the complex stuff, versus, you know, single tooth or whatever? How does that break down?
80% bread and butter, single tooth. When I say single, means one or two.
Sure.
Implants, and maybe 20% are more complex implant treatment.
Okay, nice.
In fact, I work closely with Glidewell. I like their laboratory. I'm not saying they're the best lab in the world from an aesthetics point of view, but they are the best lab in the world in terms of their technology and how they do things. And I use some of their statistics that they share with me, and 91% of the implant cases that come through their laboratory are one or two teeth.
Sure. Well, I think that, I mean, that's how it probably should be to some extent. I mean, don't you think it's like, yeah. I mean, think of how many, when you got out of dental school, think of how many bridges you did. You know, think of how many people needed single tooth replacement. That's, you know, in a perfect world, that's where we'd be going, you know. Although, I think there's a few guests that we've had on the Dental Hacks podcast that might argue that, you know, but edentulism is less common now than it was. It's not uncommon, but it's less common than it was. So it makes perfect sense, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, what I've learned, what I didn't want to get into implant dentistry 10 years ago was, I was like, I don't want to do all those fancy surgeries. I don't want to be taking bone from the chin or from the hip or the ribs. Because every time you go to a seminar, that's all these guys would show, guys or gals would show. I'm like, I don't want to do that crap. I mean,
dude, that's,
why would I want to do that?
You just describe why I don't do implants.
But you know what happened was I got to a point where I got tired of sending it out. 2008 came and I needed the money, so I wanted to do some of the things myself. And I started doing this. I'm like, I can just choose not to do those cases. In fact, there's more business not doing those cases than there are in those cases. So I would tell you, Alan, that then you're missing out if you're not doing some of this.
Sure.
Because that complex surgery, just farm that out to your surgeon.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know. You know of any courses that I might be able to take to learn?
I don't know anything about that stuff.
I love that. So tell me about the experience of putting together a teaching center, because I know that we've got some listeners that have thought about doing that themselves.
It's been a dream of mine, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And so I believe that you should always chase your dreams. And if you're in a position to do something, you should do it. So I built it so that if I had never used it, I would at least say I did it. And it's been good and it's been tough. I mean, it's tougher to put people in the seats. It's tougher. I'm not necessarily a blatant promoter of, sure, hey, come see me, or hey, I won't teach you anything unless you come to my seminars. I'm not like that, but it's enjoyable. Let me tell you, it's another business for me.
Sure.
So that part of it's really fascinating to me. How can I make it work? How do we make it work? It's, you know, I wouldn't recommend it to most people, to be honest with you.
Sure.
It's not an easy business.
Yeah. So how many clinical days are you typically seeing patients versus, you know, doing stuff with the teaching? Has it changed, or is it the same as it always was? Tell me about that.
No, I'm working in the office 3 full days a week, and okay, full used to mean, so I used to work 4 days a week. And then what happened was I was traveling and speaking so much that I would work Thursday till about 3 o'clock and then get on a plane at 6 o'clock. And it just got to be too much. So I went down to 3 days where I worked from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, 5:30 nonstop, no lunch. And then I started having to work out at lunch because I got obesely fat.
Amen, brother. Know that story.
So, and we can talk about that if you want. It's an important conversation.
Yeah.
But so then I started having lunches again. And then this year, I'm still at 3 days a week, but I drop my kids to school in the morning. So I start at 9 o'clock and we go till 5. And we generally speaking have a lunch, and we generally speaking end at 5. I'm of the philosophy you don't say no to patients.
Sure.
Or the right patients, or the right kind of cases. I stay late, or I work through lunch if necessary.
Sure.
So I'm working 3 days a week. Thursday mornings are my surgery mornings. So maybe once or twice a month, we'll have my surgery day at the surgical center with Uday, and we'll do our complex cases on those days.
Nice. Okay.
So I'm a full-time practicing dentist.
Sure. Yeah, that's very cool. So tell me about taking your kids to school. What happened with that? I'm seeing a fair amount of your photos on Facebook. So you got to tell me about that.
It was kicking and screaming. I didn't want to do it because I couldn't leave the office. The office would die without me. And too many important meetings. People were losing their teeth. The world was going to start gumming it if I didn't start going to the office.
Well, you know, yeah.
At 8 o'clock. And, you know, what really happened was I got fixated on my, I mean, I've always been fixated in my office, but I would go at 6 o'clock in the morning, or 6:30 in the morning, and I would do God knows what I would do there. And my wife finally said, you know, hey, and my wife's a physician, so, and her practice, she's a psychiatrist, her practice is, and we're in the building together.
Okay.
So it's not like she's a stay at home. Anyway, I don't want to get down that road. But anyway, she's just, it's a bad idea to go down that road. So she said, hey, listen, I can't drop the kids, pick the kids up, run, you know, work in my practice and all of that. And she said, you know, your kids are starting not to know you. So I want you to drop your kids to school. I'm like, what good is that going to do? How's that going to make them know me? And so it's been great. I absolutely love doing it. I mean,
that's cool.
It's good. So I dropped my two of my three kids off at 7:15. The other one can't get dropped off until 7:45. So I take him for breakfast every morning from after I drop the first set off to take him to school. And it's great. And we spend some time together.
So
and
how do the other two feel about that? Let's get serious now.
Well, they don't know. We don't tell them. It's
okay,
our secret.
Okay.
And they're too young to be on Facebook, so okay. They don't know.
So they're probably not going to be listening to the Dental Hacks podcast. So
I hope not.
Okay, good. I hope not too. Honestly, that's just sick. That's awesome. That is so good. I love that.
And it's great. But you know what? The real lesson in that is yes, I spend more time with my kids and makes my wife happy and all of that. But what I've seen is that my office can run without me. And that's what I want. I want my office to, sure, be able to run without me, because that's the only way I'm going to be able to really become an entrepreneur and really be able to do some of the things I want to do, is to have a situation where my office can function properly without me.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right, so let's go ahead and tackle that whole the whole weight loss issue. I want to hear about this because
Oh God. I don't want to say I've always been fat. I've always not been skinny. How about that?
Yeah. Listen, I'm right there with you, man. I know that's.
Yeah, I've seen your pictures. So.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
That was great. you know, people would say things to me like, hey, you need to take care of yourself. And, you know, I say that that's good. That motivates you. But if
no, it doesn't,
it irritates the shit out of me.
Oh, my God. I'm sort of like, hey, great. F*** you.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. I don't have the gift of skinny.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I think some people may say that from a place of kindness and concern. But when it's something that if you're a fat guy like me, you think about it a lot. I mean,
no, you do. I don't care what anybody says. You think about it.
Yeah.
I thought about it. It affected my life. I mean, it really does. It affects your self-esteem. And I'm a relatively confident human being, but it affects your self-esteem.
Yep.
You know, you don't go, you wear bigger clothes, which makes you look even fatter. And you say no to go do things. And then I'm speaking out in front of people. And, you know, it really affected me. And one day, you know, the problem with Facebook is you meet people and you do things and you keep up with people. But the other problem is people can post photos of you without you approving it. So one of my neighbors, we went to a tailgating thing at, I don't know if it was a concert or something or a football game or something. And they posted a picture of me and I looked at it because you visualize yourself so differently than how other people see you.
Yeah.
And I looked at this picture and I was like, holy shit, what is that?
It's soul crushing. It's soul crushing.
I mean, I grew up playing sports in high school and doing all of those things. And, you know, I wasn't the model fitness, you know, or anything like that. But and what happened was, you know, when you're hungry, you're hungry. You know, and I'm not talking about food wise. I'm saying when you're working hard for your practice and all of that, your health becomes the least important thing to you. At least it became that to me.
Sure.
And So I looked at this picture and I told my wife, I said, Mona, I mean, this sucks. She goes, yeah, I can barely get my hands around you now.
Yeah.
But, I said, well, I'm ready to do something about it. And, and people, you know, my family had said things to me before and my friends, some of my dental friends have said things to me. And even a few of my patients that I know pretty well have said things to me. And, you know, like, you know, hey, when you're working on me, your belly keeps touching my head.
Yeah. You know? I haven't gotten quite that, but I know that story. You know what's funny? I'm just going to throw this out here. Now, first off, I always thought I was, even in high school, like you say you were athletic, you weren't the model, but in high school, I always thought I was fat. Like, I always knew that I was fat and overweight and everything like that. I look back at pictures, I'm like, you were doing okay.
I would love to look like that.
Seriously, exactly. So
but then see, the problem, Alan, is you got to look, it's all relative.
It is.
You got to look back to your skinny-ass high school friends, you know, because we've all gotten bigger over the years.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, some people haven't, but yeah, we kind of have. I mean, it happens. Yeah,
those people are on cocaine.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to solve the problem.
But, you know, what happened was we called my office manager and we said, listen, no more working through lunch. We've hired a trainer whose sole job it is to show up at lunchtime and take me for a walk.
Nice.
So now I'm a dog. I get taken for a walk.
Do you have a collar?
At lunchtime. No. But I remember the first time Mitchell came over. He said, well, let's do a baseline. And Mitchell is chiseled.
Yeah.
I mean, like chiseled. And he comes over and he goes, well, let's do a baseline. He put this heart monitor thing around my chest and hooked it up to his watch. I thought that was pretty cool, by the way.
Yeah.
And he said, so why don't we go for it? Why don't you jog? And let's see what you're doing. So I jogged for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was huffing and puffing and he told me to stop. He says, if you continue, you might die.
Well, it's good to know.
Oh, Jesus. So he walked me every Monday and Wednesday for, I don't know, a couple of months, you know, and then slowly, and to me, everything is not like, it's not a revolution, it's evolution.
Yeah.
Just like in the practices, it should be. You should evolve your practice, not revolutionize your practice. And so to me, the weight loss was an evolution. I started with, hey, let me just get kind of active. And then let me just kind of fix my food a little bit. And then slowly that turned into one day we were sitting there and my wife says, so how long are you going to continue to get walk like a dog? And I go, what do you mean by that? She goes, are you ever going to start jogging? And I said, you know, basically in my mind, I was saying, fuck you. And so Mitchell came the next day and I said, Mitchell, let's start jogging now.
Yeah.
And so we started jogging and that led to, and that was difficult, but that led to eating better and better foods because, hey, I'm doing this much work here. Let me do a little bit work there. And by 9 months I had lost 50 pounds.
Wow. And look,
I felt phenomenal.
Yeah.
I always use the word, I felt clean.
Yeah.
And what I felt was like, I felt like I ate well. I mean, it's not like I ate nothing. I ate a well-balanced meal, and I felt so good. I mean, I woke up and I hopped out of bed and I went to bed, and you know, I felt so good, and I was so good in my office. I was on top of my game then.
More energy, all that stuff.
Everything, and I've gained about 20 of the 50 pounds back. Okay. And in fact, it's amazing. It's amazing. You know, you learn things in life. And so what happened was I got to a point where I missed a little bit, and I said, you know what, I don't really need Mitchell to take me running. I can do this on my own.
Yeah.
And slowly I did it for about a week, maybe a month, and then suddenly I stopped.
Yep.
And I stopped. So Mitchell comes back next Monday.
Oh, good for you.
But it's just like practice. You know, we focus on something and we get our office there, and then we move on to the next thing, or we think we can do it on our own.
Yeah.
And we forget to re-energize or re-infuse ourselves. And we need help. We need help. Bottom line is, you cannot build a great practice on your own. You need the help. I'm not saying you need professional help or a coach or a practice consultant or a life coach, but you just need help. Whether that's this podcast, whether that's, you know, my podcast or Howard Ferrand's podcast, you just need somebody there, because if you really think about it, dentistry is a pretty lonely business, because yeah. The majority of us are solo practitioners. We live in our own world. We hang out with the same 3 to 5 or 6 people that are in our office who put you on a pedestal, that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And that's good and bad both, because it makes you think that you're better than you are.
Yeah.
And so you need to get out there. And that's one of the great things I love about speaking that people don't understand is when you hang out with people that do great, it forces you to do greater. And that's, for me, that's what pushes me. When I see my friends like Neil or Rich Rosenblatt or any of these guys, and I see what they're doing, and I can help them and they can help me, and it's great. I mean, outside of the plane travel and the airports, I love getting on the road.
Seriously.
It's fantastic.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's cool. That's fantastic. Oh, geez, you got a lot going, man. I'm impressed.
Well, it's not too bad. You know, I mean,
It's
amazing.
It's not too bad because you're balanced about it, though.
Not balanced. I mean, I'm far from balanced. Are you kidding me?
You're unbalanced.
Ask my wife that question.
Yeah, the psychiatrist. Okay.
Yeah, or ask my team members. I mean, my team got me a sign that says the crab is in, and they have it turned one way one day and turned the other way the other day, depending on how I'm doing. That's their way of telling me that I'm being a jackass.
That's good. That's really good. Oh my gosh.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, I would tell people that our profession is fantastic. I don't know what I would do if I wasn't a dentist. I mean, look, it allows us to fulfill every urge that we have, the urge to be geeky healthcare providers, the urge to be entrepreneurs with owning our own practice, the urge to have capital. If you like to do real estate, you can do that. The urge to be a techie if you want to have a high-tech office. You know, the urge to provide for your family and provide for retirement, or the urge to travel, whatever your urge is, you can do it from this one simple profession of taking care of people's teeth. I don't know what else you would do.
You've kind of proved that you can do all of it if you want to.
Well, you know, I've almost failed twice. You know, we shared that, when I didn't take insurance, that we almost went under at that point, and we had to start taking insurance. And then I almost went bankrupt again in 2008. I mean, we bought a big house in 2007. We bought a big building in 2008. And then our practice cut by 35-40% with the economy. And, you know, when you have to sell your car to make your mortgage, you know, reality sets in.
You bet it does. You bet it does.
Hey, Turin, I've heard a lot of people say that the stock market is going to take another crap here fairly soon. How would you prepare yourself to be different than 2008 this time around, if that were to happen?
Well, I learned this from my dad. I don't invest in the market. I invest in myself, and I mean that seriously. Like we invest in retirement, and that's managed beyond my control. But I don't invest in the stock market. I invest in my practice. I invest in some real estate things that we do. But I don't invest in the market. I think the way to fix your practice so that it doesn't get totally affected by this is to just be nice to people, break down barriers, things like just saying thank you to people. Thank you for coming to the office. We appreciate you being here. You know, it's interesting. I got a phone call from my mother-in-law the other day, and I have a great relationship with my in-laws. And she called me and she said, hey, I went to this dental open house. One of our family friends had opened a dental practice a couple of miles down the road from them. And she goes, he showed me this great technology, the Galileos. Do you know anything about it? I think you should get one. And I just, over the phone, I just start laughing. I teach half the dentists in this country how to use that thing.
That's
what do you mean I should get one? But the lesson in that was that the lesson is we take it for granted what it is we do, and we never tell our patients. I bet you, as big of as a CEREC proponent or cone beam proponent I am, I would bet you half my patients don't know, more than half don't know I have that stuff.
Sure.
Because we don't showcase it, because it's every day for us. It's the same things over and over again. You know, and you know, the other big thing that we did, and I'm totally going on tangents here, so just stop me whenever. the other important thing that we did was two or three years ago, we started self-financing patients. So we will payment plan people for 3, 6, 9, sometimes even 12 months with an automated credit card on file. And it's worked great. 99.9% of our patients have paid us. It's automated. It's all, you know, it's all relatively automated to where it's, you don't think about it. And it's amazing. 26% of my collections come through our in-office self-finance,
wow,
no interest payment.
Wow. Program. That's pretty cool. That's kind of amazing.
It's pretty amazing. And I never thought it would work. My team members all looked at me like I was crazy. And it wasn't my idea. It's not like I dreamed this up. I stole it from somebody else and
just
found a way to try to integrate it well within our practice and set up some parameters of how we wanted it to work. And that's been huge for us.
Is that the authorized.net?
Yeah, that we call it FlexPay in our office, but yeah, it's basically it's a credit card draft where you put the dollar amount in using AuthorizedNet or eProcessing.com or whatever the different credit card processors are, and we put the dollar amount in that we want to charge and how many months we want to do it, and it just does it automatically every month.
That's
and if you really think about it, you're not really financing a lot, because you know most of our we're an insurance office, so you know probably 80-90% of our patients have insurance, and 80-90% of our work is probably not crown and bridge necessarily. It's basic restorative or crowns, the single crown, let's say. So insurance is going to pay 50-80% of it. So you're really only financing 30-50% of the total bill, and the way we do it is we take a 25% down payment. A 20-25% down payment. So you're really only financing like 30% of it at max anyway. And then we take one payment before when we schedule, and typically our patients have to wait a month to see us. So really we're maybe even financing 20% of it.
Nice. Nice. Hey, listen, I'm going to suggest that we invite you back onto the podcast room. Would you come back on the podcast sometime?
When are we going to do it again? Just tell me when.
I don't know. We'll be in touch for sure, because I think we just kind of scratched the surface here. But I really appreciate you coming on the Dental Hacks podcast.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Anytime you want to do it,
fantastic.
I love it.
Fantastic, fantastic, Tarun.
Yeah, thanks, Tarun. It was awesome.
Thanks very much.
I'll see you soon, Alan. See you soon. Tell the Brain Trust not to make fun of me and Rich Rosenblatt. I'm after him. Did I ever tell you my joke about Rich Rosenblatt?
I think we probably need to hear it.
So Rich, I met Rich when he wasn't doing any speaking or anything, and we met him through Dental, and we didn't even talk about Dental Town, for God's sakes.
No, we got lots that we got to talk about. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's been the most important thing in my career was Dental Town. And, but anyway, so Rich, we invited Rich to speak at the CEREC 20, I think it was CEREC 25. Mm-hmm. And, Rich is short. We make fun of him being short. We overly make fun of him. He's not like a midget or anything, but we make him sound like he's 2 feet tall.
Sure.
And so he was in this room, and it was packed. It was overly packed. People were sitting on the floor and everything. And Rich is behind the podium, and you can barely see him over the podium. So I turned the podium sideways so you could see Rich talking.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I think Rich told that story on the Dental Hacks podcast.
Oh, he did. That's great.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Well, then when you have Rich back on, you should have him tell you guys a story about me and Samir's when we went to the first townie meeting. What happened on the car ride there?
Yep, he wanted to know about that too. So we clearly have to get you back, Tarun.
Well, we'll keep that story for another time.
All right, the cliffhanger. Thank you so much for being on the show, Tarun.
Thank you. If you guys need anything, let me know.
All right, we'll talk to you later.